So the theme of my talk tonight is coming home to simplicity. Simplicity of the breath, the body, the moment. Coming home is on my mind tonight. Can you hear okay? Good, okay. Coming home is on my mind tonight because I just returned to my current home base from a 2-week silent meditation retreat yesterday. In fact, there's at least one other person here who was on that retreat. And as sometimes happens after vacation or retreat, at least for the first little while, it's possible now and then to still tap into that sense of relaxation, ease, simplicity. And of course, there's all this other stuff that happens after we've been away for a while, right? Get home, there's tons of laundry to do. It's time to sort through the mail, check on the plants in the house, maybe tend to the garden. And let's not talk about checking on the email inbox. It can be overwhelming, right? It can seem like a bit much sometimes. This getting back, this coming home after being away. And often, for many practitioners, it can seem like coming home to our bodies. This moment can also feel full of clutter, activity. Just like settling into home, settling into the body, the moment, the breath can take some time, can take some patience, and hopefully relaxed effort. In being at home in practice, I find it helpful to make the space I inhabit comfortable. This space, body, heart space, comfortable. In particular, I found it very meaningful in my own life to practice with contentment. Of course, this does not involve being contented all the time. Some people find it helpful to notice what blocks them from contentment. I certainly have. It's also helpful to notice where contentment and ease show up throughout the day, or where they show up in this body or in the heart. I find it helpful to enjoy it, to notice ease, even to bask in it a little bit, even if it's just for a minute, like a little break. And enjoying it can help set the condition for it to arise more often. You might check it out for yourself to investigate what helps contentment and ease arise for you. Consider it as I'm talking. It really helps grow that sense of contentment, spread it, to notice it. Neuronally, I guess, what fires together wires together. We gather more attention, then we gather more capacity. It's also helpful to notice when contentment and ease vanish. Notice what takes you out of that space. What am I reacting to, holding on to, preoccupied with, worried about? My biggest teacher for this was the onset of a chronic pain issue. I'm actually just talking about this with a couple of friends on break. 12 years ago or so, it happened actually. It was such an important and difficult learning for me in so many ways. It actually brought me to this practice. It's my Dharma doorway, as they say. And one of the most powerful ways that learning happened was the repeated experience of going to all these doctors and clinics, physical therapists, to try to address my body's needs. And I found that there were many, many ways to be in the waiting room of a doctor's office. I could wait in a state of impatience. I could sit there hopeful, expectant. I could preoccupy myself with a magazine and blow off the time. It could be fear, almost anything. In other words, I could wait while leaning into the next moment, ruminating about my worries or the past. Around this time, though, one of those therapists introduced me to meditation. It was such a beautiful alternative. Instead of waiting, I could just be. And there was no longer a sense of wasted time. It was all those little downtimes during the day became practice. Instead of an inconvenience, a chore, or a difficulty, waiting times were an opportunity to be in this moment with this breath, whatever it is. Instead of having just half an hour for meditation, sometimes I had far more. Whether in a doctor's office, a grocery store line, standing waiting for the bus, you name it. All those little pieces of our day that fit in between everything else. And they became a doorway for coming home to this. This body, this heart, this mind, this moment. So it became a real source of meaning for my life, these little down moments, these little moments of simply being present. I found that not knowing was also a much nicer place to be than being seduced by the endlessly repetitive channel of my brain. That channel liked to fill my imagination with fears, sketchy details that weren't really true and took me for a ride. Most of us like to predict the future, right? We build all these scenarios in our heads. I don't know about you, but it turned out for me that I am a completely lousy predictor of the future through all these scenarios. I stink at it. And what a waste of energy. Around that time, I encountered Pema Chodron's teachings, her books. And she gave me a really great tool. It was a question, three words. Are you sure? I remember taping them to my bathroom mirror. And every time I spun out about something I didn't want to think about or something that wasn't helpful, are you sure? The answer was almost always, no, I'm not. No need to go there. And that was a teaching I learned from a teacher much later in my practice. And this very simple instruction, almost like a mantra. No need. No need. No need to believe everything this mind likes to think. No need to get caught up. No need to shortcut the joy or awe I'm experiencing in the moment. Just savor and be. So much simpler to just be. Fear? Okay. Just fear. Agitation? All right. That too. Joy? Yeah, that too. Contentment? Yeah. breathing with it. Breathing with it is a really sensitive instrument for showing us what's unfolding. And sure, it certainly has been for me. And it turns out that most of the time when I was worried about something, things were actually pretty much just fine in that moment. Over time, I found it was possible to shift to a sense of gratitude, or at least acceptance of what is actually happening, rather than worry or fantasy or desire about what might happen. It turns out, of course, that for many of us, much of the time, simplicity is actually not all that easy. Coming back home to this body might mean meeting agitation, tension, restlessness, or stressed out mind. And that's okay. Meeting discomfort with full attention, compassionate attention, is such an act of love. Directly turning towards suffering is something we Buddhists talk about a lot, right? What's the point? Could just be dreary, right? A real downer. The point is that, as my teacher just said on this last retreat, we can see the ouch and the ah. It's like kindergarten language, right? What hurts? What's relief? For me, I found that turning towards suffering was important because it helps me see where the ouch is in my mind and my heart. And it helps me not pile on more. It's also then to see if it's possible to let it go or let it be. Meeting suffering with love is also like alchemy. It can transform, or at least loosen, relax things. Even if the suffering doesn't go away, it's building the muscle of loving attention. And that is something beautiful, strong, and worthy in its own right. But how do we get to the simplicity being with just this? Learning how to see the ouch, meet it with love, and let go. And ah. I'm not going to bullshit you. It takes time, courage, persistence, and practice. And many of you in this room know that full well already. It can be a long journey coming home. As Eugene is fond of saying, the fastest way to get from point A to point B is to be completely at A. It's a journey that requires honesty and authenticity. Remember, for myself, my first year on the cushion, I don't think I noticed anything different or at all exciting when I was sitting. What kept me practicing was noticing more ease, even just a little bit more relaxation, every other part of my life. There was just a little bit more, okay. But perhaps a year is a bit short to really judge a practice. The Dalai Lama suggests evaluating our practice every 7 years or so. It is, after all, a journey. There are ways of being in meditation that can help you find little still points, little spaces. The next breadcrumbs on the breadcrumb trail through the forest. Think of them as resting spots to hang out at point A. And for me, it often involves giving this very often busy mind something to do that engages it in being here, in this body and moment. And meditators, Buddhist and non-Buddhist, have been engaging in many, many ways of staying here for millennia now. The coming home is a process. And there are many, many techniques, some very elaborate ones, to engage in the process. But generally, coming home takes time. Sometimes it might feel more like a mindfulness gymnasium where you're exercising the muscle of awareness. Other times it might feel more like a library where you can research all kinds of fascinating things while staying under one roof. There was a story on an NPR podcast recently that I really liked. It was told by this guy who was the son of a custodian, a janitor. His dad worked at the library. And I guess back in those days, the custodian would often live in the top floor of the library in a flat. So they actually were in the building. It was like a perk of the job. So the guy telling the story, as a kid, he thought they were really rich because they had this amazing place to live. He didn't realize at first that, oh, being a custodian, I'm not actually, my family's not that rich. And he said he had to be really quiet during the day, but then as soon as the doors closed at night, they had the entire building to themselves, and he could run and play in the halls and like check out whatever he wanted and hide in the stacks. And it also cultivated this lifelong love of learning. Because every time he had a question, he would go down and crack open a book. Go to a different section, crack open another book. For me, it's kind of just like that, investigating our own bodies and minds. It can inspire this love of learning, a place to be interested, to play in our own halls sometimes even. The Buddha talks about this fathom-long body being all we need to study the text of the Dharma, to study the text of nature, because we are nature, to study the way things are for us. For many people, myself included, it really helped to spend a long time being a student of the Dharma. The breath, especially. The way it showed up. What it taught me about myself. How subtle or intense it was. How shallow or deep. It was such a marker of truth for me in situations where my mind might not quite have penetrated through to how things really were. The body knew, even if the mind was telling stories. As I mentioned, there's all kinds of techniques that have evolved over the hundreds of years since the Buddha's time, of cultivating concentration, investigation, and hanging out and becoming familiar with this body and breath. There's many, many ways of approaching the text, this body and this heart. I find what keeps my own practice alive is honoring what calls my attention directly to the experience of now. And that can be different from month to month, from year to year, from day to day. It's a beautiful way to approach the unfolding of practice, just to keep it, I'll let it change, let it evolve. But one classic way course, that we practice here is the practice that the Buddha practiced before his awakening, the night of his awakening, and then he practiced for the rest of his life after his awakening, his mindfulness of breathing. It's called Anapanasati in Pali, the language of the Buddhism. I'm going to read just a little bit of the Anapanasati Sutta. It was the theme of this retreat, so I'm bringing a little bit of my retreat to share with you guys here. It says, a practitioner having gone to the wilderness, the foot of a tree, or an empty building, sits down with legs crossed, body erect, establishing mindfulness, awareness, all around. One breathes in and breathes out with awareness. Breathing in, one knows I'm breathing in long. Breathing in short, one knows I'm in breathing in short. Breathing out long, one knows I'm breathing out a long breath. Breathing out short, she knows, breathing out a short breath. I think those two stanzas stand in for every little bit of investigation we can do about any difference in breath. There's 16 steps, I'm only going to read the first four. But the next is breathing in, experiencing the whole body. You might check it out right now, wherever your body is. Breathing out, experiencing the whole body. And breathing in, relaxing the body formations, those traces of tension in the body. Breathing out, relaxing the body formations. And it's worth noting, while I'm not going to read the rest of it, that much of the rest of this instruction is about noticing joy, pleasure, contentment, and settling into ease. And it's good enough for the Buddha to practice after his enlightenment. So it's probably pretty good. He also taught his only son this practice. So there are different seasons of practice for all of us. Sometimes it's time to investigate, get curious, and try all kinds of different things. Sometimes it's to go and retreat a lot, whether it's a day at a meditation center or something much longer at a retreat center. Sometimes it's integrating our practice into work and daily life. All kinds of different seasons. There's also times where it's time to relax and rest and digest whatever learning has emerged from observing experience, from relaxing the body. Those more restful times of practice are really quite something special. Less like coming home to a library or going to a gym than it is like entering a very quiet, well-lit, comfy room. A deeply peaceful space. Maybe an internal garden, an internal sanctuary. For me, coming home to simplicity is like that now. It's coming home to trust. It's really helpful to trust the practice, trust the process. And if I'm able to meet what is happening with simplicity, trust, honesty, then often what arises is not a problem. Even if it's complicated, can I be simple with complicated? In coming home to this body, can we allow the breath, a lifelong companion, to open the door, lead you in deeper, deeper into the quiet spaces? Each time, come home to the body, to the moment, with simple authenticity. It's cultivating conditions for the practice to grow, to deepen. Cultivating a path home within. Can you let your body, breath, simplicity, just being in the moment, be a refuge, make a simple, empty space in your day? Ask yourself, how do you find contentment and simplicity? Thank you for your kind attention. We have time for questions, comments, complaints about the talk, about the practice. If anyone would like to speak. And if you don't have questions for me, I have questions for you, by the way. Could you please go up to the mic? Thank you. And you can flip it around if you want, so you're actually facing me. And please include your name if you don't mind.
Sure.
Thanks.
My name is Joshua.
Hi, Joshua.
I've been coming to the Sangha on and off for several years, actually. I've never met you before, but I'm so happy to hear your teachings tonight. Thank you very much. Tonight, I took away relaxation as a sort of a central theme of your teaching. And this is very important to me. I feel like I suffer from pretty bad anxiety. And this is one of the things that has brought me to Buddhism.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, in your knowledge, in your studies, in your experience, how much does relaxation and just a sense of physical and mental ease have to do with awakening?
A lot.
Okay. I'll just leave it at that.
Yes, it's directly related. I will say a little bit more.
Sure.
You don't mind.
Yes.
For me, the depth of my practice has been directly related to how much I can relax into what is and trust what is. And the deeper that trust gets, the deeper the understanding gets and the broader it gets. So it's a great way to go that's one breadcrumb trail that really does, it's onward leading.
Is it analogous to awakening, or is it a separate experience, would you say? Or
awakening, my understanding, the way early Buddhists define awakening, which is this lineage, which is early Buddhism, is a total complete letting go of clinging to anything that causes suffering. So, gripping. One way of thinking of opening up and letting go is of relaxing. So, they're directly related. I'm not going to say they're the same thing.
Sure.
But it's leading us in the right direction.
Hi, my name is Jim.
Hi, Jim.
So one of the things that caught my attention when you were doing your teaching was you mentioned the word still point.
Yes.
And sometimes I go on Worldwide Insight and listen to teachers. And the previous one, not this one, but the previous one, did a lot around relaxation. And I really appreciated that because sometimes the meditations are almost, philosophical is probably not the right word, but it feels that way. Versus actually getting kind of a really good guided into the deep relaxation that was being referred to. And still point means a lot to me because I do cranial sacral and somatic experience, et cetera, to try and relieve the underlying trauma of, you know, yesteryears.
Yeah.
And so I don't often hear Dharma talks refer to the still point.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering what you could say about that nexus, because I really like going for that. When I feel my practitioner can help me get there, I'm really having an experience. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. So, to be very candid, I've only had cranial sacral a couple of times, so I don't have deep experience with it as you do. The still point for me is a way of describing a space that can open up in the body, the heart, the mind, of just utter stillness that exists even while there's activity moving around us or within us. For example, there can be anxiety happening in my core, but there can still be a still part that's holding the anxiety. So, it can become a reference point to the extent that we develop it for, oh, there's that too. Even if everything's moving, everything's happening, you know. And I had anxiety for years, so I practiced with a lot of buzzing early in my practice. There's something really beautiful about trusting even that tiny little bit of stillness that's within. Even if it's just a moment of the meditation. So I'm afraid it's not very technical, but that's what I got.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Yes. Kevin.
Brings back, I was the one on the retreat with her.
Yeah, I retreat, buddy.
But I think that it's such an important, what you're saying to me. You know, the teacher said at the retreat that you can boil this whole thing down to two words, trust awareness. And I asked him after, you know, by awareness could also mean trust the Dharma, trust the Tao, whatever you, just trust the process that you're not, that it's going to happen and you're not in control, but you're held in it. And he said, and if you need four words, it's trust, awareness, and relax. And that whole thing, and when you're, you know, when I also have had anxiety issues, and when you're kind of having to hold on to stuff because you're, you know, because it's, you got to keep control of it and make sure that, you know, there's, you know, it's just, it's eating you. But when you have this sense that, okay, I can trust this process somehow, and that probably comes from practice and little by little opening up to it, and then you get to where you can have the ability, well, I can face what happens and relax and do that. It's just, like you said, that to this is and sometimes it's probably just prying one little finger off at a time, you know, slowly till you get a little.
So I love the way you made the fist, but if I may, I'd like to provide an alternative to using your other hand to pry off the finger. Because this, pulling one finger on another hurts, right? It's uncomfortable, or at least it's tense. There's conflict there. So another analogy that you can use is to take the other hand and just support the tension. Allow the tension to be held in something. And then, as trust grows in practice, slowly, little by little, moment by moment, sometimes for some of us, year by year, this hand learns to open. But it will open faster if it's not feeling attacked by another part of the mind trying to pry it. At least in my experience. Thank you very much for your question. So, if there aren't other questions, I have a question for you, which is, where or how do you notice contentment or ease in your days or in your body? It doesn't have to be anything profound. But what allows it to happen? Where do you see it? Yeah, please. Are you comfortable coming up, or would you rather talk from back there?
I would prefer just here.
Okay.
Yeah. Just feeling my feet in the floor, or my body in the floor, being grounded.
So just feeling your feet on the floor, or your body on the floor, so literally being grounded.
Yeah.
Nice, thank you. Anybody else? Yeah, please. Can I talk to you into coming up?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Music's a big music's a big part of my life, so I often have like a soundtrack going on in my mind. And yeah, there's some moments where I get so lost in the soundtrack that I just forget about everything else that's going on around me. So those are moments of stillness, I think.
So becoming absorbed.
Yeah, becoming absorbed in the music that's going on. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Yes, Kitty.
A lot of simple things that come to mind, like a good meal or being having a deep conversation with an old friend. But just recently, I spontaneously started doing things, especially if I'm on public transportation, is where it happens the most, because you're seated already and you can really look at everybody that's not looking at anybody, because they're all looking at their phones mostly. And you know, there's just like a sense of smile to each of these people, and some are like rough and edgy people that look really like they're about to explode or something, and just it's not as easy there, but just working with that. And I just found I just spontaneously have had this little game, like I'm looking at everybody, and the more somebody doesn't look pleasant to me, the more I want to ask the question, I wonder what that person has done and given in this life that's been of great help and value to other people. It's just this little game I started playing, and it's not like I even have answers that fill in. It's just to look at everybody that way, knowing that that's true of everyone, no matter, there's maybe a lot of things they're struggling with and have done that have brought them some weird karma. Anyway, this just felt really sweet. I just had this huge smile sitting on the BART doing that.
Beautiful. Yeah, I love practicing in public transportation and airports. Humanity. And what you're saying is a beautiful reflection. Yes. Can you? Yeah. If you come up, that'd be great.
Well, I was just reading that New York Times article today about like the difference between you have to build community, you have to interact with people to find sort of peace and happiness, versus like here I'm trying to do the opposite. You know, I want to find contentment and ease in my solitude. This is more like a question right now. Like,
sure.
What are they contradicting each other or?
Not at all.
Okay.
So the simplicity and ease is a very simple way of talking about one part of the practice, but at least on the Buddhist path, there are traditionally three refuges we go to. And one is the Buddha, the idea, the potentiality of awakening, or the man, the example. One is the Dharma, which I think of primarily actually as the practice, though it's also, you know, the teachings that have been handed down over 2.5 millennia. But the third, very important one is Sangha, community, spiritual friendship and friendship. So I didn't talk about it in this talk, but that's where the rubber meets the road in this practice.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question. So we need to stop, but if some of you are coming back next week, I'll be giving a different talk next week. I have no idea what it is yet. However, you could, if you wanted to, contemplate a question between now and then, and we can talk about it some, which is, what conditions within you or within your life help to foster ease, contentment? That's part A. Part B, what takes you out of it or blocks it? So it's optional. I don't really if we're assigned homework, but it might be fun to think about. Put it in your pocket and take it home with you. Thank you so much. Let's dedicate the merit. May this practice be of benefit to the beings in this room, to the lives each of us touch, and to all lives that are touched in this world. May all beings be healthy, happy, peaceful. May all beings be free. Attention and your practice.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.